We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
I want to read you guys a letter to the editor that we found in the Lexington Herald Leader. It was a fascinating attempt at trying to explain why some people support President Trump. Here's what he says. Why do good people support Trump? It's because people have been trained from childhood to believe in fairy tales. This set their minds up to accept things that make them feel good. The more fairy tales and lies he tells, the better they feel. Show me a person who believes in Noah's Ark, and I will show you a Trump voter. Look, this gets at something, Dean, that my executive producer likes to say is, hey, voters want to be lied to sometimes. They don't always love being told hard truths.
That's Chuck Todd reading a letter during NBC's Meet the Press. I know people who believe in that biblical account of the flood of Noah's Ark and are not Trump supporters. What do the two have to do with one another, especially in the mind of the modern media? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be talking about the media, religion, and President Trump. Joining us to do so on this Friday afternoon, Terry Mattingly. He's senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. And he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
What does Noah's Ark have to do with Donald Trump?
Well, I think it would help to back all the way up to Richard Nixon. A long, long time ago, there was a famous book called The Selling of the President, I believe it was. The author's last name was McGinnis. And in this book, there was a very famous statement in which they said something like, let's face it, Richard Nixon is now president of wherever there is no bookstore. Now, when you hear a phrase like that, president of wherever there is no bookstore, you're dealing with really, really intense stereotypes about who people are and what they believe and how they believe. But at the same time, you could just say, oh, it's really simple. They're saying Nixon voters are stupid, and people who are against Nixon are smart. They read books. And the people who vote for Richard Nixon are dumb. They don't read books, so they don't have bookstores. So thus, he's president of wherever there is no bookstore. Now, years later, you had in 1993 a very famous Washington Post article, and when they were talking about evangelicals and the viewers of television preachers and the religious right, and they said, and this was not in an opinion piece, this was in an A1 news piece, and this statement was not attributed to anyone. This was stated as fact that we all know these people are, quote, largely poor, uneducated, and easy to command. All over America, evangelicals faxed in, this is pre-internet and scanners, they faxed in copies of their PhD diplomas, you know, and master's degrees and all of this other stuff. And the Washington Post repented of that, and the author of that piece later said he really meant to say that they were relatively poor, uneducated, and easy to command, which didn't make a whole lot of evangelicals really happy either. So to some degree, when you put someone like Donald Trump into the mix, someone who lives and dies by tweets, and a man who openly says, you know, I watch 6 TV channels at the same time, and numerous members of his staff have been quoted as saying he doesn't read the briefing papers, or if you write briefing papers, you've got to have it down to a couple of bullets. And, you know, he's, like I said, he's Donald Trump, a man who never uses a fly swatter when a baseball bat will do, that takes these stereotypes and cranks the amplifier up to 11, you know, as the rock and roll image would go. So we're dealing with really old stereotypes here. And obviously anyone who would believe in Noah's Ark, and there are a number of different ways to believe about Noah's Ark, a number of different ways of expressing that doctrine, that story, and even arguments about the, you know, the evidence for this or not. There's a lot of ways to argue about that, but I don't think this is an image that's not being used in an intelligent manner. They're basically saying people who believe stories in the Bible are going to be Trump voters, which is like a really nasty way of stating the fact that the biggest divide in American politics right now is between urban elites and heartland normal people. It's between Jesus land. You know, you've ever seen the famous map of Jesus land versus the Republic of Logic and Wisdom and Education, or I've seen different names for it. This is just a huge stereotype in American life right now. And it's kind of, if America ever has a Brexit, religious language, religious images, and quotes of this kind will be right at the heart of that schism.
I can't really figure out who it's intended to insult more from a journalist perspective, the Trump voter or a person who believes what the Bible says.
They're saying it's the same. I mean, obviously, no one would vote for Trump unless they were this kind of stupid person. That's just at this point a given. And of course, I say that as someone who is not a Trump voter and someone who has opposed him at every single minute of his alleged public career in politics. I mean, but that's not what's assumed here. He had that great quote, show me someone who believes a fairy tale like Noah's Ark and I'll show you. Is it I'll show you a Trump voter or I'll show you someone who's likely to be a Trump voter?
It's I'll show you a Trump supporter.
Yeah. Just, it's kind of hard to know what to do with that.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about the media, religion, and President Trump. I wonder why Chuck Todd thought that that particular letter to the editor would be useful in explaining support for the president. We'll get Terry's thoughts on that after this.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The Simply Classical curriculum for special needs moves at my child's pace and gives her exactly what she needs. So writes Amber, a homeschooling mother who has joined thousands in homes and schools teaching from this uniquely Christian classical approach to special education. Teach students with autism, learning disabilities, or Down syndrome based on ability level rather than chronological age. Use promo code LPR20 today at classicalspecialneeds.com. Classicalspecialneeds.com.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking media, religion, and President Trump. Terry Mattingly is our guest, founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, why do you think that Chuck Todd thought that that letter to the editor would be useful in a conversation about Trump supporters, explaining their support for the president?
Well, here in the South, the phrase we would use for that is preaching to the choir. And NBC, in this horribly divided media marketplace we have right now, where half the nation consumes one form of media that tells them what they want to hear, and the other half listen to a different form of media that tell them exactly what they want to hear, he's talking to his people. He's talking to the MSNBC, CBS, mainstream audience. And that's the image of altogether now the 81% of white evangelicals who just love Trump, right? I mean, it's all a part of that palette of simplistic colors.
Why do you think that also tells us a very important something we need to know about the attitude of journalism today, apart from Trump?
Well, let me jump back to the Issues Etc. conference. What are we now? Up to almost 2 years from that time when I spoke there. And the question everybody was asking me, if you remember, was, well, what do you think we should do? What news should we consume? And I argued that they needed to find a short list of people on Twitter that they could follow who read the best arguments on both sides of these things and comment on them, and that they needed to try to find out if their local papers and local stations were still interested in covering people on both sides of divisive issues and being fair and respectful to people involved in certain debates, you know, not attributing things like fairy tales to them. But we live right now in a media that the internet has pushed into transition between an old-fashioned form of journalism, which ironically could best be described as truly liberal, in which people try to listen to both sides, try to respect both sides. And you've heard me before call this the American model of the press. And then you have the European model of the press, in which people openly advocate for specific positions and let the reader know what their biases are. We're in transition where we have a lot of people right now who are doing advocacy journalism on both the left and the right, but they don't want to say they are. They want to say they're doing old-fashioned American journalism, when in reality, they've already started the story knowing who's right and knowing who they're going to have wear the black hat and the white hat in this story. And it's all very confusing because the same institution, of course, I criticized the New York Times a lot on this, especially after the Bill Keller quotes that we've discussed many times, where he says that we're not liberal other than or aside from coverage of moral, cultural issues. It's kind of like a limited advocacy journalism. The same paper may have brilliantly fair and accurate and balanced stories on things happening in international affairs or business, sports, or even arts or whatever, but then turn right around and on issues of religion, morality, and culture, you're just getting one side's talking points. And at the most, you're hearing one paragraph from the other side taken off a blog or a website so that they don't even have to deign to talk to these silly religious people, and they just move on. So we're in this confusing age. What we're seeing, and why you get a reaction to something like this quote, what we're seeing is that people still get upset about this. When you walk up and you slap someone right between the eyes with a quote like this in a setting that's as respected as Meet the Press, and people are still capable of saying, what the heck just happened? And this is the sort of thing that we do at Get Religion all the time, trying to point out these things. And I think it's very significant that a lot of conservative people have written off Get Religion and have stopped paying attention to it because they think we're naive to think that the media even cares about issues of fairness and balance anymore. And I think there are some journalists who don't care, and I think there are a lot of highly competent, skilled journalists who really still care about these issues. And that's why I still do what I do.
I noticed this shortly after President Trump was elected, and after his inauguration, the Washington Post and the New York Times both started running a lot of ads via social media. Truth dies in the darkness, those kinds of things, where it sounded like they were going to double down on the American model of journalism,
mm-hmm,
and really go for the truth wherever it may be found, whatever it happened to be. But at the same time, individual journalists for both of those institutions have kind of said publicly many times, well, you know, it's in a state of emergency. because President Trump is president.
Right.
And we have to abandon this model of objectivity because Trump.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. And of course, Twitter, woke Twitter, has been the place where that drama has played out. And sometimes people get on Twitter and they just can't contain themselves. And we get another one of these quotes that everybody gets to argue about and jump up and down about, in my opinion, with good cause. But like I'm saying, we're in a period of transition. Truth dies in darkness is a great slogan, but if you've already decided that there's only one group of people that you need to listen to in order to figure out what you believe the truth is, and you've already definitely decided who constitutes the darkness. And I think we would agree that to sane, rational people in America, the darkness is constituted by people who believe in fairy tales like Noah's Ark and stuff like that. I think that's what's being said by Chuck Todd in that interview.
Well, when Todd read the letter on the air, he directed it in part to Dean Baquet of the New York Times, but Baquet demurred. We'll find out what that means with Terry Mattingly next.
Church music directors can find a new community at Prelude to Postlude, the CPH music blog. Learn helpful tips for managing music ministry and involving members, and meet the composers of some of your favorite new pieces. Plus, find suggestions of music to use for special services, and preview some of our newest works with free samples you can use at your church. Visit us at preludetopostlude.org.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Clear, concise, consistent. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Substitute Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Do you need a home, car, wedding, or student loan in 2020? Check out Lutheran Federal Credit Union. During January, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to their Ministry of the Month, LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran FCU. Good for you. Good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Lawmakers in New York cheered with delight upon the passage of legislation that would allow a baby to be ripped from the mother's womb moments from birth.
You can't act like a peacock if you know that nobody is looking at you.
If I take a different practice from, let's just say, a Baptist church, and I incorporate that into a Lutheran church, what I am actually incorporating is not a neutral practice.
Did I repent enough? I don't know. Was my repentance true? Those Christians go around on crutches. They have a debilitated gospel.
The first verse in the ordination rite says, "Go therefore unto all nations." We know that "go" there is not an imperative, it's as you go, while you're going. But note, that's the first verse mentioned, going.
That's just a taste of the five sound bites that we will be playing for you in their entirety in a little while when we play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Year in about 15 minutes. We've taken the top vote getters from Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week through 2019. We brought them together and you get to pick Soundbite of the Year. You can vote in advance at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, or by email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or wait and give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. In the meantime, we're talking with Terry Mattingly about media, religion, and President Trump. Terry, when Chuck Todd of Meet the Press read that letter to the editor, he directed it at, in part, Dean Baquet of the New York Times. But Baquet demurred.
Well, he did, and he returned to a theme that he has voiced in other times in the past, which is we need to do a better job of understanding both halves of America. I think it's very significant that when he says something like, and by the way, we need to do a better job of covering religion, I think it's very significant that he gets to that by saying we live in a country right now where we have people voting for Trump and we have the alt-right and we have large parts of middle America who no longer believe in journalism. He'll say things like that, and then he'll say, which means, or in other words, we need to do a better job of covering religion. And this isn't new. The Chuck Todd interview where Baquet speaks up on this issue, I think it's important to remember that he's been there before. On National Public Radio, back in 2016, he made a very similar statement, and I was happy he even used the phrase, get religion.
I think that the New York-based and Washington-based, too, probably media powerhouses don't quite get religion. We have a fabulous religion writer, but she's all alone. We don't get religion. We don't get the role of religion in people's lives. And I think we can do much, much better. And I think there are things that we can be more creative about to understand the country.
That is, again, New York Times executive editor Dean Baquet speaking back in 2016 to NPR's Fresh Air's Terry Gross. What do you think there, Terry?
And he's saying something very similar now. And as someone who teaches a course on this topic, I always point people back to the New York Times self-study of 2004 and 2005, where over and over they say, we need to do a better job of covering the rest of America. We need to do a better job of covering religion. We need to do a better job, etc. And then where they run into problems is, does that mean we need a newsroom that contains a more diverse set of intellects, life experiences? And that gets us down to the kind of the beach, you know, that I've been dying on for decades now in my work, both at Christian colleges and in the mainstream press, which is intellectual and cultural diversity, and above all, a respect for the views of people on both left and right in the world of religion, and a respect for the subject of religion, and a willingness to take religion as seriously as you take politics and business and sports and law and arts. You know, if we had newsrooms that treated religion like these other subjects that they truly respect, we wouldn't consistently have the problems that we have with religion coverage, in my opinion. We wouldn't see the kinds of errors about religion that we continue to see all the time and that, you know, you and I have discussed, you know, for years now. The actual quote in the Chuck Todd interview, besides not using get religion anymore, it's still this sense that religion is something associated with this part of the country that we don't get along with very well. And Baquet always says, I grew up in a very religious family, with an emphasis on the words grew up. And then he always talks about, let me read part of this. And I think, look, people in New York and Los Angeles is the places I've lived in, not everybody, but people in the worlds we travel don't always see religion as the powerful force that it is. I think that's a vague way of stating they do see religion as a powerful force, and they see it as part of the darkness that they're trying to defeat when it becomes associated with the true faith of most newsrooms, which is politics. Politics being the only thing that's real, and politics being the thing in which change actually comes to the world. Newsrooms believe religion is important to the degree that it's political. This is one of the things recently that the historian Thomas Kidd has been stressing in his book, Evangelical, What is an Evangelical, or Who is an Evangelical? A Faith in Crisis. He's been stressing over and over that part of the problem is that way too many political journalists, and let me single out political journalists, because obviously skilled, trained religion beat reporters, while I may disagree with them from time to time, you see a completely different level of work on these subjects when you're dealing with the religion beat. When you're dealing with political reporters, basically they're only interested in religion to the degree that it affects politics. And if that's your approach to religion, then you're not going to understand the power of religion in the lives of millions of Americans, and according to George Gallup and other polls, probably about a third of the nation, to a strong degree, attempt to live their lives day after day with religion as one of the foundation defining elements of who they are and why they do what they do. We see this affect all kinds of stories. Right now, I've been very moved by the struggles to cover the anti-Semitism that's affecting New York City right now so much. And there was a piece the other day in The Forward, a liberal Jewish publication, where somebody just in an opinion piece said, can we go ahead and admit that one of the reasons we're struggling to cover these stories is that all of this is happening to Orthodox Jews? And that a lot of liberals in America don't like Orthodox Jews. Because once again, these are the kinds of fairy tale people who believe in things like Noah's Ark and following all of the traditions of ancient Judaism, or is their version of the traditions of ancient Judaism. So this is a huge divide. Over and over, I have used the image that potentially this could turn into the American Brexit, that we just have an economic divide, a political divide, a cultural divide, a legal divide right now between two radically different kinds of Americans at this point. And I think the divide is pretty close to 50-50, in large part because the huge urban areas that are so liberal and blue, as we would put it in the blue versus red stereotyping. There's a lot of people that live in those areas. And just like in Brexit, where it seemed like it was London and one or two major areas versus the rest of Britain, what we're seeing in America is largely between coastal elites, Northern California, New York, Boston, Washington, etc., versus large parts of America, in the Bible Belt and the Great Midwest and whatever else. So once again, a familiar topic that you and I have discussed many times, but here we are again listening to people reacting to the same divide.
In that 2016 interview, was Dean Baquet essentially saying, yes, we journalists are in the elite class and we don't run in the kind of circles where religion is considered significant beyond its political impact? Was he essentially admitting
that? Yeah, it seemed to be. Yet, at the same time, they were listening to the New York Times Reader's Representative, Liz Spaed, was writing that in the paper, which was creating a lot of furor inside the newsroom. And eventually, she lost her position over trying to say precisely that to the newsroom. So this is where I think the equation breaks down. In the 2005 self-study, when the editor who responded to that study was Bill Keller. It was very significant that the people said, we need to do a better job. We need more diversity in the newsroom, and it implied cultural diversity, more military veterans, more people from rural areas, more religious believers of a wide variety of kinds, etc. And then in his response, Bill Keller essentially said, I totally agree, we should do a better job, but I think the people we already have can be trained to do a better job. In other words, don't tell me who to hire. We don't need cultural diversity in this newsroom. The people who are already there will do a better job. And to me, that's the flip side of the traditional and conservative religious believers that I've dealt with all my life, who just say, journalism is worthless. This is not a part of God's creation. This is not a true vocation and calling. You can't be a journalist and a Christian at the same time. And they write it off. The image that I've always used, and of course it ended up being the name of a book that some of us went together to produce, Blind Spot. I've always argued that we're dealing here with a blind spot that has two sides and two halves of America that don't communicate with each other. And it's really the two parts, two halves of the First Amendment don't respect each other. And it's just as much a problem that there are religious believers, conservative religious believers in many cases, who don't respect the constitutionally protected role that journalism plays in our society. That's as much a part of the equation as the journalists who don't respect the constitutionally protected role that religion plays in our culture and in our land. Now, a lot of these journalists, like Chuck Todd and Dean Baggett, and what they would say is, no, we think that religion is a good thing. We know a lot of religion that's good. And the sense you get from the paper is that there's good religion and there's bad religion, and it's the New York Times and its editors who get to tell you which is which. Which religion is a part of the darkness? Which religion is part of the light? Which religion is good? Which religion is bad? And which religion is fairy tales, and which religion is rational and thus on the side of how we view history.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, talk with you next week.
Glad to do it.
When we come back, it's time to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Year. We have five soundbites from 2019, the highest vote getters from all of our soundbites of the week from 2019. We'll play them for you, and your vote will decide which will be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Year.
Listen to the best of the church's Christmas music during the entire Christmas season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. During the 12 days of Christmas, Lutheran Public Radio, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll study pressure to deny Jesus, the beggar worships Jesus, the good shepherd, Jesus lays down his life, and Jesus and the Father are one. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, as we continue our walk through St. John's Gospel on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org, thewordendures.org.
Imagine this. What if you planned your vacation? You picked the location based upon where you knew there was a good Lutheran church. Well, we're here to let you know that if you're planning a Southern Oregon vacation, whether you visit Crater Lake, raft the Rogue, fish for salmon, or head down to the Redwoods, there's still a place for you to receive forgiveness. Faith Lutheran Church in Rogue River, Oregon. What's a vacation without the gospel? Faith Lutheran Church, Sundays at 10 a.m. Visit faithrogueriver.org.
What is the Lutheran witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I'm delighted to be chairman of Preach the Word Project, a project of our Synod to strengthen the preaching of all of us pastors in the Synod. We know how eternally important that is.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Carl Fekencher talking about the new Preach the Word Project.
So we've put together a program of 12 modules that will be coming out this year and over the next 3 years on a variety of preaching topics for pastors to do together with two other pastors, two guys they trust, two guys they feel comfortable with, written materials and very fine video quality materials that are now becoming available.
Preach the Word helps pastors work together to improve their preaching with several resources and by interacting with seminary professors and fellow preachers. Find out more at lcms.org/preachtheword. lcms.org/preachtheword. Preaching is challenging business. We all can use some fresh ideas. lcms.org/preachtheword.